spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its intendations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today is Morton Wishengrad's The Mark of Cain, a fictionalized radio biography of Sophie Irene Loeb. Miss Aline McMahon, distinguished actress of stage and screen, is starred as Sophie Irene Loeb, and Alexander Scorby is featured as the narrator.
Me who it is.
It's the police.
What do you want?
You know what I want, Mrs. Fellers. I've got a court order for your son. Will you open the door or do I have to break it down?
You can't have him.
Oh, don't be foolish. The court order says that the boy goes to an institution. Open the door, Mrs. Fellers.
I said you can't have my son. The only way you can have him is when I'm dead.
All right. I'm going to break the door down.
Go ahead, officer. I'll be on a fire escape.
Well, what do you mean?
You break the door down and I jump. I said the only way you get my son is when I'm dead. And that's what I mean. Every word.
The year was 1910. The place was a poverty-stricken tenement building in New York City. In 1910, a policeman blew a whistle. A hand pulled the signal on a firebox. A fire truck, a police fire charge, responded.
Fred the Met! Get a move on! I want those life nets, Fred!
Cassidy, Anderson, Kaplan.
Yes, Sergeant.
Cover the roof, the backyard, and the areaway.
Yes, sir.
Come on. Costello, get those people back. Get them out of the way.
The sound of the mob, the brute, mindless sound of the morbidly curious, were attracted always by the pain and the shame of the despairing.
Hurry with those life nets. Get a move on, men. Spread those nets.
She jumps at an angle. She'll smash herself against the pavement.
Cool, that's you through. Costello, I told you to hold the people back. Now get back, lady. You don't belong here.
My name is Sophie Irene Loeb.
I wouldn't care if it was William Howard Taft. Back at the police line.
But I'm a reporter for the New York Evening World. I'm Sophie Irene Loeb.
Drop in when I'm not busy. Now beat it, Miss Loeb.
Sergeant, if that woman kills herself, there's a good chance you won't be sleeping well tonight.
What do you want?
Maybe I can persuade her not to jump.
She's gone crazy. You'll be wasting your time.
Well, it's only my time and it's her life. Sergeant, let me try to talk to her.
I tell you, she's hysterical. She won't listen.
Well, what do you lose if I try?
Miss Loeb, she may hurt you.
Well, I'll try not to let her. Sergeant, give me a chance.
Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
Take Miss Loeb to the roof. Show her the way to the fire escape.
Thank you, Sergeant. Come on, Cassidy.
In 1910, Sophie Irene Loeb found one hysterical human life to save. This is how you try to save a human life. The heart pounding, the chest bursting for air, the breath torn from the throat. She raced up the filthy tenement stairs to the roof.
This way!
She paused only for a moment to suck her breath back.
Now take it easy, lady. From here, you're on your own. Watch your steps.
come any further. You take one more step and I jump.
Teller. Mrs. Teller, I'm your friend.
I haven't any friends. I said don't come nearer. So help me, God, don't come
all
nearer.
All right, Mrs. Teller, I'll stay here. Now, please, I'm not from the police. I want to help you.
Nobody takes my boy.
Well, I don't know anything about that, Mrs. Teller. I don't even know what your boy's done.
He didn't go to school. He should have gone to school and he didn't go to
Mrs.
school.
Mrs. Teller, you're not in any condition to talk. Where's your husband?
Dad, that's where he is. That's buried.
Why didn't the boy go to school?
Because I have to work, that's why. There's no one to watch him. He gets wild. Is that a reason to take him from his own mother? Is that a reason to send him to an orphan asylum? I'm his mother, his own mother. Who do they think they are? What kind of a city is this? What kind of laws do they make?
You're right about the law. Stop crying, Mrs. Teller.
You're not saying that just because...
No, no, they're trying to do a terrible thing to you. If that's the law, it's a wicked law.
If you're playing with me, if this is a
no,
trick...
No, it's no trick, Mrs. Peller. My mother is a widow. My brothers and my sisters, I myself, we were brought up by a widow. I think I know what's in your heart.
What do you want?
Don't jump. That's no answer to anything.
They'll take my boy. Well,
probably.
They'll send him to an orphan asylum.
Probably.
Then what's the good?
You'll be alive. You'll both be alive. You'll have a chance to get him back.
Not a chance in the world. I know them. They never give you a chance.
I'll help you.
What for? Who am I to you?
Another woman. Mrs. Peller, I'm going to walk down this fire escape ladder.
Oh, here, wait a minute, you fool, I'll give you my hand.
What for, Mrs. Teller? Who am I to you?
Hmm? Yeah. Yes, you. Oh, lady. I don't know who you are. But whoever you are, don't let them take my boy. Don't let them.
In 1910, a woman did not leap to her death, and a young boy was taken from his mother and placed in an orphan asylum. It was the law. It was something Sophie Irene Loeb could not prevent. But there is something in an evil law that challenges every free spirit. There is something in social injustice that outrages every free soul and personally affronts every righteous being. And this is our social guilt. The guilt that every honest man and woman carries on his conscience. And this is also the tragedy of every man, to see injustice and to be powerless against it. In 1910, it was the tragedy of Sophie Irene Loeb.
What do you want?
I waited out here for you, Mrs. Teller.
Well, you got what you wanted. Leave me alone.
How is the boy? They wouldn't let me see him.
You tried to see him?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I'm tired. I'm awfully tired, Miss Loeb. They say a boy needs his mother. But a mother needs her boy, too. I just ain't human without him.
Are they treating him all right?
I don't know. They give him more to eat than I can give him.
Does he look well?
Well, that's just it. He's gotten skinny. He's all dressed up in a uniform. Black shoes, black stockings, black pants, black sweater. All the orphan children in black. Like they're going to their own funeral.
Mrs. Peller, it's my problem now. It's my problem as much as yours. We've got to work it out.
Shut the door, Miss Loeb, and sit down. I want to talk to you.
I'm going to be scolding,
That's right.
Mr. Tennant, has my stuff been that bad?
No, your stories have been good.
Well, then what's the matter?
I've been editor of this paper for a long time. I've known a lot of reporters. Some people can write about anything. Murder, suicide, violence, death just rolls off their back. They digest their dinners. They sleep well.
It must be wonderful to be like that.
But you're not like that. That makes you unlucky.
I know. I see Mrs. Peller in my dreams.
Forget her. That's good advice.
I can't. I've got to help her.
No, you don't. You don't have to help anybody but Sophie Lowe.
I've still got to help her.
It'll never stop. There are 1,000 Mrs. Peller.
I just want to help her.
Don't kid yourself. You'll want to help them all. It's a matter of glands, and you've got the wrong glands.
When I was a girl in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, my mother used to say, Sophie, your blood isn't redder than anybody else's.
Your mother had the wrong glands. She should have given you the kind of glands to let you mind your own business.
Right now, Mrs. Peller is my business.
And how about the 1,000 other Mrs. Pellers? Watch out, Sophie. You'll burst your cocoon and you won't be a butterfly. You'll be a professional do-gooder. A busybody with straight hair and no sense of humor.
I'll take a chance.
What's come over you all of a sudden?
My mother.
Say it in American.
Oh, I can't say it. She'd laugh at me. Couldn't put it into words. The way she used to light the candles on Friday night. That make any sense to you?
Not even a nickel's worth.
Well, my mother could have been Mrs. Peller. She could have been the one to stand on a fire escape.
Sure, your mother could have been Mrs. Van Aster, and you could have been buying your diamonds by the pound.
I don't know about diamonds by the pound, Mr. Tennant. But I've got to help Mrs. Peller.
You won't change your mind?
Mm, it's not a matter of mind.
Well, what are you going
to
do?
Well, first I'm going to talk to some of the other women, the widows like Mrs. Peller, and then I'm going to try to do whatever can be done for them.
I'm sort of wondering...
Yes, Mr. Tennant?
How did it go? The Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, thy brother? Sophie, the whole world is marked with the sign of Cain. Can you cleanse a whole bloody world?
No, Mr. Tennant, I'm not trying to fix the world. I just want to help one woman. A widow called Mrs. Peller.
You're an ignorant fool, Sophie. You're talking about the whole world.
With every despair, a new hope is born. In 1910, there were many men who were despairing, and for at least some of them, Sophie Irene Loeb was a new hope. She accomplished no miracles. She was merely one woman writing in a New York newspaper. She was merely one woman speaking to other women, visiting orphan asylums, studying them, talking to widowed mothers, writing, calling meetings, talking to whoever would listen.
Homes are broken up every day. Sisters and brothers are separated. It isn't enough to use taxpayers' money to build roads and highways. You have to build the children who are going to use those highways. Mr. Superintendent, this orphanage raises misfits. Children just can't grow in an institution.
Madam, what are you trying to do? Abolish orphan asylums?
Well, that is an idea, sir, isn't it? Tell the assemblyman that Sophie Irene Loeb is waiting.
And your business, madam?
Well, I want Assemblyman McHugh to introduce a bill for widows' pensions.
Sophie, quit it. The world is permanently congealed. It can't be changed.
No, you're wrong, Mr. Tennant. Look in your copybook under Socrates. Nothing is permanent but change.
Don't bother introducing us, Miss Loeb. I know Assemblyman McHugh.
My friends call me Marty.
Have a cigar, Marty.
No, don't use the stuff. Thanks. Used to be a prize fighter, and I found... smoking cut my wind.
Mr. Tennant, Assemblyman McHugh.
Marty?
Marty. Well, it doesn't sound very dignified for an assemblyman.
There isn't anything dignified about an assemblyman.
Marty's going to introduce our bill.
Yes, but don't expect any miracles. It's practically a whole career to see a bill through. It has to get 3 readings in the state senate alone. 1 reading every year.
The paper will support you, Marty.
Hmm. I think I'll need it.
Well, I'll support you with facts and affidavits. I can prove that apart from being better, it's cheaper to keep Mrs. Peller's boy at home than it is to raise him in an orphanage.
I'd like to see those figures.
Well, I'll ask Hannah Epstein to send them to you. She's one of my co-workers. She'll give you all the facts you need.
Well, it looks like a fight.
That isn't all, Marty. That's the beginning. When the widow's pension bill goes through, we'll see what we can do about foster homes for children born out of wedlock.
Sophie, one thing at a time.
I know, Mr. Tennant, but there's a lot to do.
Oh, private philanthropic agencies may oppose you.
Yes, that's right. In a way, you're taking away their business.
It's everybody's business, because I'm talking about every man's child.
Miss Loeb, I'm standing in your corner. Every man's child, that's it. And what they need and what we've got to give them isn't charity. It's a chance.
Sophie Irene Loeb wasn't alone. She was joined by men like Marty McHugh and Senator George Thompson, by women like Hannah Epstein, by the prayers of thousands of widows. It was a fight for the dignity of human life. Through 1910 and 1911 and 1912, the fight continued to abolish orphan asylums, to provide pensions for widows and allowances for their dependents, to prevent the child of poverty from being regarded as a pauper. And it was Sophie Irene Loeb who focused attention on the plight of the child born out of wedlock.
I am every man's child. I did not ask to come, but I am here. I arrived on this earth like every other child. I have been sent from pillar to post. I have been in many places. I am able-bodied and healthy. If I have the right to be born, I have other rights. I have the right to play. I have the right to have clothes like other children. I have the right to the loving care of people who are interested in me. But I am the ward of the state, society. I am put in a home of 1,000 children, but not the home of one. I am the child of the institution. When I am 16, society will have finished with me. It will send me forth handicapped with the sign of the asylum. Shall all who are born like me suffer the sorrows of no man's child?
With every despair, a new hope is born. Sophie Irene Loeb was a hope for the despairing, for those born into a society which was stained with the mark of Cain. Behind her, the great state of New York swung into action.
We've got another packing case of signatures on the sidewalk. When do we take it to Albany, Miss Loeb?
She had many allies. There was the governor of the state of New York.
Sophie Irene Loeb, I appoint you to the State Commission of 15 to investigate conditions in European countries to the end that we may learn the best way.
There was Assemblyman Marty McHugh, former prizefighter.
Mr. Speaker, I introduce a measure for relief of widows and their dependent children. Said measure to be known as the Widow's Pension Bill.
And finally, in her there was an inner voice that spoke.
Deliver the poor that cry out, the fatherless also that hath none to help him.
It was an irresistible tide. In 1914, the legislature passed a Widow's Pension Bill. On the same day, the governor signed it, and the bill became law.
Congratulations, Miss Loeb.
Well, thank you, Governor.
I'm also congratulating you as the head of our party in New York State.
What do you mean, Governor?
Miss Loeb, you've got a name. You've won it the hard way. In November, that name on our ticket can be an asset to my party.
You want me to run for office?
Now, here's a list of 5 elective officers. Take your pick, and you're the official party candidate as of now.
Thank you, Governor.
Which one? Just take your pick.
None.
All right, I can understand your point of view. If it's something better you want, let me talk to the party leaders. I think we can add to this list.
No, Governor, I don't want to run for any office.
Why not?
Well, you wouldn't understand, sir.
Try me.
There's a woman called Mrs. Peller.
What about her?
Well, there are thousands like her. Next month, 2 months from now, whenever the new county welfare board will reach her name, she's going to an orphan asylum and get her boy back.
I don't understand you.
Well, it's simple, Governor. She's going to get her boy because of this new law. She'll have a little pension money. She'll be able to look after him. And perhaps I'll come to see them and I'll bring a geranium for the fire escape.
Yes?
Well, don't you see, Governor? I want to come as just plain Sophie Loeb. I want her to say hello to me as me, not as a public officer. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, Governor, is that... Well, I know I haven't any kids of my own, and... Well, I don't want Mrs. Peller to think that I did it for pay.
In 1914, high up in a New York tenement, a geranium rested on a fire escape. And during the years of the First War and the decade that followed, Sophie Irene Loeb continued her work. The things she did not do alone, but with hundreds of men and women like her. And when she died in 1929, it was possible for them to say, she delivered the poor that cried, the fatherless also that had none to help him. The blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon her, and she caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. She put on righteousness, and it clothed itself with her. She lived in a world that is stained with the mark of Cain. And perhaps because of her and the men and the women like her, there is a hope that one day the stain will be removed. If you would like a free copy of the script you have just heard, write to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present a talk by Dr. Jacob Cohn of Temple Sinai, Los Angeles, California. Dr. Cohn.
Sophie Irene Loeb confessed that her social idealism, and especially her interest in the cause of the children of the world, was largely derived from the religious influences radiating from her pious mother. It has been one of the paradoxes of the human spirit in our generation that it has witnessed this great protective upsurge on behalf of the rights of childhood to a home and security, and at the same time has seen in modern warfare that reversion to barbarism which made the child the most vulnerable victim of the most modern war machine. The lacerated flesh of little children, whether in London or Rotterdam, in Hiroshima or Nagasaki, has shown the child to be the most defenseless victim of a war waged in an age which had just discovered the claims of childhood upon the adults of the world. The cry of the children, once made beautifully articulate in the lines of Elizabeth Barrett Browning, again rings in our ears. There is no doubt in my mind that the status of childhood in society will become one of the touchstones of our civilization. And there is a fragment of biblical prophecy in which this thought is movingly portrayed. I wonder whether even Sophie Irene Loeb was aware of its existence. I refer to the 7th chapter of Zechariah. Here we find no such eloquent rhapsodies of social salvation as are contained in Isaiah's vision of international peace and brotherhood. This prophet contents himself with words such as these: execute true judgment and show mercy and compassion, every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor, and let none of you devise evil against his brother in your heart. In an even quieter mood, he gives this community, the new Zion, then in process of erection, a name. He calls it the City of Truth. He goes on to describe the main features of the city of his dreams, the stigmata of this redeemed humanity. It is evidently not a city to be known for its sanctuaries and its altars, its priests and its saints. According to the prophet, the city proclaims its grandeur in other ways. There shall old men and old women sit in the broad places of Jerusalem, every man with a staff in his hand for very age. And the broad places of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the broad places thereof. It was as simple as that. One can almost hear the laughter of the children in the streets. Only a city in which old age would be secure and childhood safe and happy could be called the City of Truth. It will require many warm hearts and much wise legislation until society extends its protecting care over old age and childhood. I should hate to think of the City of Truth, as St. Augustine somewhere is said to have described his City of God, a city of which we are always the builders and never the inhabitants. God grant that sometime we may all live in the City of Truth. Sophie Irene Loeb was one of its humble builders.
Thank you, Rabbi Cohn. Today's Eternal Light program, The Mark of Cain, was written by Morton Wishengrad. The music was composed by Morris Mamorsky and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical music. Miss Aline McMahon was starred as Sophie Irene Loeb. Alexander Scorby was the narrator. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. This program is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations, and comes to you each week at the same time under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. If you would like a free copy of today's script, write to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.